This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast, the early week edition, as we get you updated on power ratings, letdown spots, a whole host of things to get you ready for week number 7 of the college football season. Weekday football is here in full force, as always, joined by Adam Burke. You can follow him on Twitter at Skating Tripods. And, you know, it's that time of year, Adam, where your preseason bets are either looking awful, looking good, or somewhere in the middle. And I want to start by a little tip of the cap. Over the summer, in the VSiN College Football Betting Guide, our colleague Wes Reynolds gave out Indiana over 5.5 wins. And he also gave it out on this podcast on August 6th. And man, I wish they were all that easy. I don't know, maybe Florida State under would have been easier. But other than that, a Indiana over 5.5 win total, which I did bet, thankfully, cashes by week 6. So, man, if they were only all that easy, right, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's always nice when you get that winner before it really starts cooling off. Although, God, it may never cool off here. In Las Vegas with what we've got going on with the temp. Still 100 degrees out here. Not that people are going to complain because it's going to start snowing in places. So, you know, could be worse. But, yeah, I mean, Indiana, look, I got to be honest with you. I mean, Ohio State looked pretty good in the second half against Iowa once they kind of got things going a little bit. Slow start, not a big surprise, kind of Ryan Day's MO. But all of a sudden, I'm extremely worried about that Indiana game where the Hoosiers are just they're way better than any of us expected. We knew they'd be better. But they are way better than any of us expected. And look, I mean, it's not even just that they're winning games. They're just blowing teams out. I mean, even the game against Maryland a couple of weeks ago, they scored 42 points. They were -4 in turnover margin. So Kurt Cignetti has got them going in the right direction for sure.
Yeah, I tried to thread the needle because, as I mentioned, I do have over on 5.5 wins. So I was able to cash that. But I did take Maryland on that Saturday a couple weeks ago here on the podcast. And yeah, to be +4 on the turnover margin and not be really anywhere close to covering is quite the feat. But that was the case. And yeah, who knows? I mean, at what point are we going to have a discussion, have a kid sit on the knee and say, hey, we might have to talk about Indiana making the playoff. We got some interesting scenarios, no doubt, when it comes to the playoff, when it comes to the Heisman Trophy. Crazy weekend. Obviously, we're recording this on a Tuesday. You all know by now that Vanderbilt takes care of business and one of the more stunning results, not only of this college football season, but in recent memory. I mean, it's unbelievable to see what we saw down there. And that was no fluke that Vanderbilt won that game. And are you going to be going to get a piece of the goalpost? It is now for sale. You can get a 4-inch piece of the goalpost over there at Vanderbilt. So I don't know if that's going to be something you're going to add to your studio set there, Adam.
No, it is certainly not. You know, look, I think it's kind of fascinating too. We can kind of parlay this a little bit into a discussion of the Heisman Trophy market, because I got to say, I think it's probably a decent time to buy Jalen Milroe now. Like, maybe Alabama will lose another game or two. Maybe Kalen DeBoer doesn't fully have this team buttoned up, but remember, they beat Georgia not that long ago. Like, this is still an elite premier team in college football. Jalen Milroe does not play defense. It was not his fault that they lost that game. So I think now is maybe a pretty good time to go ahead and take a piece of Milroe, because now you have an Alabama team that, you know, I mean, look, Tennessee, maybe their defense is great. We don't know. They really haven't played anybody yet. But again, they just lost to Arkansas over the weekend. So, you know, I think maybe Milroe now is the time to buy.
Yeah, and, you know, I'll give you credit. You've kind of been really good at finding those spots. Last year, we all remember the run with Bo Nix. You mentioned Dylan Gabriel a couple weeks ago, and I actually took a little 18-1 on Dylan Gabriel. We'll see how that works out this weekend when they have their biggest test, no doubt, of the year against Ohio State. I probably am going to have to put to bed my Nico Iamaleava Heisman Trophy ticket. Maybe don't run out of bounds on fourth down on the final play of the game, but he now sits back at 35-1. But, you know, I've been past couple of weeks, Adam, I decided I want to keep tabs on the ebbs and flows of the Heisman market. So on October 2nd, after Alabama beat Georgia, I decided to put together a spreadsheet of about 12 players and where they were in the Heisman race. Jalen Milroe is the favorite last week, as low as 2-1. DraftKings was plus 250. He's now 10 or 11 to 1 after that loss. And Travis Hunter, off a bye, he goes to around the favorite. Actually, Ashton Jeanty now is the favorite there. So Ashton Jeanty, a G5 running back, and Travis Hunter, a wide receiver slash cornerback, are your favorites to win the Heisman Trophy. And as I've said a million times in this podcast, it has become a quarterback award. Since 2000, we've only had four non-quarterbacks win the award. I also went back and looked up, Adam, the last time a player on an unranked team won the Heisman Trophy, that was 1969. So Travis Hunter in Colorado, we'll see how they fare this weekend. They're a home underdog to Kansas State. It feels like people have jumped back in on the Colorado train. Good win over UCF. Doesn't look as good now because UCF followed it up by getting their ass kicked by Florida this past weekend. So it's a fascinating market to keep an eye on. And I certainly don't disagree with your mindset on Jalen Milroe, because to your point, the Alabama defense is the thing that let him down. Now, the problem would be moving forward, Adam, does the Alabama defense continue to let them down as they have a showdown with Tennessee in a couple of weeks? They get Missouri at home. They get LSU. So there are certainly some landmines out there. But, yeah, I think Jalen Milroe, not that I need another addition to my portfolio here for the Heisman, at 11-1 at DraftKings is certainly an interesting look there for the Heisman Trophy market.
So, look, I think we need to talk a little bit more about Ashton Jeanty here, not only because he's the favorite, and as you mentioned, a group of five running back being the favorite to win the Heisman at this time of the year is pretty outrageous. I mean, if he beats Barry Sanders' record, that's probably his path to get it, right? But the other thing here is, because of the new college football playoff format, you now have a situation where a Boise State can get in, right? So not only does that give him more exposure, but it's also going to be, man, this is the team in the college football playoff with the group of five bid, and it's because of this guy. So maybe there truly is a very, very strong path for Jeanty to win this thing. And I'm looking at my numbers here now. They're 25.5-point favorite this week on the road at Hawaii for me. Then they have a bye week. 4-point favorite on the road against UNLV. That's the game. Because otherwise, I have them favored by 31, 23.5, 16, 25, and 16.5. So, obviously, an Alabama versus Vanderbilt type thing can happen. And there is a chance that Boise State does get upset at some point. But if it's not the UNLV game, it's hard to see where it comes from. And if they're the undefeated group of five representative in the college football playoff, I mean, I know we talked about it last week that we didn't really think there was a chance that he could win it. But then, you know, Milroe goes out and Alabama loses, not his fault. Cam Ward in Miami, they tried their damnedest to lose. And then if Gabriel doesn't beat Ohio State this week, it'll be hard for him to kind of move back up the board. So everything is falling into place for Jeanty to actually do this thing. And of course, there's zero line equity whatsoever in taking him to do it.
Yeah, at this point, I think the biggest, if you're coming in on the other side, and that's where I'll be here. Let's start with this. And I tweeted this out about Travis Hunter, and I'll say the same thing about Ashton Jeanty. Both of those players are spectacular talents. But if they were to win the Heisman Trophy, they'd be going against essentially 45 to 50 years of history of a, whether it be a group of five player like Ashton Jeanty or a non quarterback on an elite, on a team that's a fringe top 25 team in Travis Hunter. The problem I would have for this is that the voting for the Heisman Trophy is outdated. Too many people vote. Not enough people probably know the name Ashton Jeanty, which is an absolute joke if you're able to vote for the Heisman Trophy, but let's just call it what it is. And for Boise State, what's their highest profile game moving forward? It's UNLV on a Friday night at the end of October, and it's also the Mountain West Championship game, which fortunately I believe is on a Friday night this year, so that's a good thing for Ashton Jeanty and Boise State, but the schedule's pretty soft.
Well, they're probably going to play UNLV again, right?
More than likely. It seems that way. Yeah. So, look, I'm not trying to crap on Ashton Jeanty. He's unbelievable. And, you know, I put in a bet on Saturday Took under 192 and a half rushing yards for Ashton Jeanthe. He had 186 at halftime. But fortunately, and shout out to Mike Sanford, who I thought nailed it on the VSiN College Football Tailgate show, where he said he's not going to play in the second half. And that's exactly what happened. And I know there was some moron out there on had some camera in his face saying, this is ridiculous. Do you want him to win the Heisman Trophy? No, Spencer Danielson wants him to win the Mountain West and go to the playoff. And oh, by the way, I saw Bud Elliott over at CBS put out his early projected college football playoff bracket. And it was pretty interesting to note that Boise State had the bye. And it's not crazy, Adam, for Boise State to earn the bye. Let's just run through the scenario. They run the table from here on out. Boise State does. They go 12-1, their lone loss being on the road at Oregon by 3. And then someone from the Big 12, let's call them, I don't know, Iowa State loses a couple games and wins the Big 12, or, I'm trying to think of someone but someone from the Big 12 wins it at 9-3. Are they definitely going to be ranked ahead of Boise State? I think there's a realistic shot that Boise State, if they run the table and continue to look as impressive as they are, and their lone loss is a 3-point loss on the road at maybe a top five team in Oregon, that Boise State could get the benefit of the doubt to be ranked ahead of the Big 12 champion. And that's all you need. Remember, the rules don't state power four teams get byes. So, I mean, what if I'm looking at what if West Virginia wins the conference, or BYU or someone like that wins the conference? It's not a foregone conclusion that they're going to be ranked ahead of a hypothetical 12-1 Boise State team, but that's for down the road. I just think it's interesting that that was kind of just floated out there. And I think people forget that the G5 champion could earn the bye if they're ranked ahead of any of the four power four champs.
Well, look, it'll be a discussion about dollar signs, right? I mean, that's just what it's always been for the college football playoff.
Well, let me ask you this real quickly to jump in there. Who's a bigger brand in college football? Boise State or West Virginia or right. Iowa
or Texas
State
Tech,
or Texas Tech, yeah. Right? No. Like, I would argue Boise State probably is.
Right. So then the question becomes, do they want Boise State playing that first weekend? Or do they want to give them the bye?
Well, the tricky part is
if they're higher ranked, right? It doesn't matter.
Right. It doesn't matter. And then right. They would be on the road, right? More than likely. Because the fifth conference champion is insured a spot, but not a home game.
Right.
But that's a discussion for further down the road. I just think it's kind of interesting that we didn't even think about, the G5 getting a bye. But look, in 2021, Cincinnati earned a top four spot at the AAC. Now, it didn't work out all that well, but a lot of teams get their ass kicked by Alabama. So it can happen. And the Big 12 is turning out to kind of be like what we anticipated it to be, where the teams that we expected to win this conference, Utah, Kansas State, already each have a loss. Iowa State is off to a good start, but haven't really been tested all that much. And you look at that conference standings right now, you've got five teams that are unbeaten in conference play: West Virginia, Colorado, BYU, Texas Tech, Iowa State. Who had those as your last five unbeatens in that conference?
I mean, it's nuts, right? We could also run into a scenario where if, UNLV gets Boise State or something like that, like Army or Navy could be the highest ranked group of five team. Like, that's a very real possibility.
Well, and think about it this way, too. I mean, right now, strength of schedule, I believe Army and Navy are 132 and 133. The only team played an easier schedule to this point, at least per ESPN's FPI metrics, is Liberty. But both Army and Navy have Notre Dame on the schedule. Navy plays Notre Dame at the end of October. Army plays Notre Dame at the end of November, both at neutral sites. So say what you will and make your jokes about Notre Dame. Notre Dame's now 4-1 with a win over Texas A&M that continues to age better and better. Army and Navy have a real opportunity, and that would just cause absolute chaos because of the Army-Navy game on December 14th, which the playoff will have been announced 6 days earlier. So there is a very chaotic scenario out there And I guess that leads me into your power ratings, which you could always check out at VSiN.com, because Army continues to just obliterate everybody in their path. They win again. They're 5-0. They're 5-0 ATS. So I know they weren't your highest riser this week. We'll get to the ponies of SMU here in a moment. But what do you continue to do with Army's power rating, Adam? Because this team just continues to exceed expectations in the betting market.
Yeah, they really do. And, you know, what's really difficult is I can't seem to get this team high enough. So I actually, I noticed there's a typo here in my article. I actually bumped Army 7 points this week. It wasn't a 5-point bump. It was a 7-point bump. Because, you know, I started putting together my lines for week 7, and I'm like, man, I cannot get this UAB Army game high enough. So I actually wound up moving Army up 7 points this week to get the number to 22.5, and it's still short. And I dropped UAB a whole bunch this week because, I mean, they've been a dumpster fire, and the Trent Dilfer thing is clearly not working out. By the way, UL Monroe beats James Madison. Bryant Vincent's doing work down there with the Warhawks. He could be the UAB head coach right now if the athletic department had listened to the players. But they didn't. They got Dilfer, and it's not going well. But I just could not get this Army number high enough. And the thing that I think is really challenging for me is, and maybe I need to evolve from this thought process, is I think about Army, and I think about the difficulty of laying big numbers with a service academy because there's such a low number of possessions in their games because they run the football 80% of the time. They've scored 37, 42, and 49 the last 3 weeks, so it doesn't really matter. They're covering numbers like crazy. 7-point bump for the Black Knights here, and also I bumped up Navy again too. Only a couple point bump, but the service academies are just rapidly rising in my number as well, except for Air Force, who continues to fall.
So Army right now, their schedule, they play UAB this weekend, whom you mentioned is a dumpster fire. They play them at home. Then they play East Carolina, who is coming off of a butt-whipping at the hands of our boy Biff. East Carolina loses, 55-24 to Charlotte? Bye week, Air Force. All these games are at home. Air Force got crushed by Navy. Then you're at North Texas. I mean, ladies,
that total might be 100.
Right. We're looking at a team that will be favored in every game until they play Notre Dame, November 23rd at Yankee Stadium. Army will be coming off a bye. I mean, Army, more than likely, it's college football. We just saw Vanderbilt beat Alabama, so anything can happen. But Army, the way that they're playing right now, should be 9-0 heading into a primetime showdown against Notre Dame at Yankee Stadium. By the way, in 1945, those two teams played at Yankee Stadium. I bring up 1945 because that was the last time Navy and Army both started 5-0. Army went out and absolutely mollywopped Notre Dame at Yankee Stadium in 1945. So we'll see if history repeats itself. But, I mean, Army should be 9-0 when they play Notre Dame, and Navy should be 6-0 when they play Notre Dame. So Notre Dame probably didn't know it, but their second and third most difficult opponent this year could potentially be Army and Navy if you say that Texas A&M is the most challenging.
Yeah, it's crazy to think about. And I mean, look, I have both Army and Navy around a 15-point dog to Notre Dame. I don't know that that's where the number will be. It'll probably be under 2 touchdowns, I would say, especially if things kind of continue the way that they're going right now. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do, you know, against a real legitimate defense. Because the one thing about the AAC, and, you know, Navy got tripped up with this, but now that they reinvented their offense, they look completely different, and teams have no idea how to prepare. For Army, you know, you got a lot of bad run defenses in this conference, and they went back under center. They're doing what they do best. Not to mention, they've only given up 49 points in their 5 games this season as well. So, you know, they're just taking advantage of a conference where nobody really plays any defense. And I don't know if it's maybe a portal and a depth issue, if it's just reimagining the way that you run these service academy offenses, because obviously it's not working for Air Force in a division where defense isn't all that great. But like, I don't know if it's depth, like a lack of depth or the portal or something, but it is interesting that both Army and Navy are just having monster seasons all of a sudden in this conference where Navy's struggled for the last few years.
Yeah, and, you know, give Navy credit, right? They went out and they got a new offensive coordinator and Drew Kronick, the former head coach of Mercer. We talked about that over the offseason, and they get the win over Memphis, a team that many believed and still could win this conference and still could go to the college football playoff. They're not out of the weeds just yet, but you look at Army's schedule from a conference standpoint, they don't play Memphis. They don't play Tulane. They play UTSA, who seems a bit down, and they get them at home in the final week of the season. So yeah, for Army, give them credit. Give Jeff Munkin a lot of credit for turning this thing back around, and they have the longest winning streak in college football heading into this weekend when they take on UAB. A team.
I got a quick question for you, because now I'm curious about this, right? If we're talking about very lofty goals and expectations now for Army and Navy, and I think they both lose to Notre Dame, so I think it's kind of irrelevant, but there is a chance they play each other in this conference championship game. So if this happens, right, and let's say we get double-digit winning seasons out of both Army and Navy, is there some shitty program in a group of five conference that's going to look at Drew Kronick and say, you know what? What the hell? Let's do this. Because you don't have anybody really outside of the service academies willing to run that gimmick offense. You know, now that Paul Johnson is no longer the head coach at Georgia Tech, do you think this is what we kind of need to break the mold? And some team that's just spinning its wheels, or maybe a bad team in a Power Five, goes, you know what? What the hell? Let's try this.
Look, I thought a handful of programs should have hired Ken Niumatalolo when they had it rolling at Navy, whether it been Kansas or I know Arizona flirted with Ken Niumatalolo. He turned down the BYU job before they were a Power Four. I look at Vanderbilt, and they're kind of running a slow it down type of offense. I mean, they possessed the ball for 42 minutes against Alabama on Saturday afternoon. So yeah, if you're looking at a P4 program that doesn't have the resources, and I think what you're seeing from Army and Navy, more specifically Navy, is it's still the triple, but it has tweaks in it, and they're able to throw the ball, and they've been explosive this year. And look, we talked about it last week on the podcast. You know, when Navy has a quarterback, whether it's Keenan Reynolds or you know, Will Wirth for that year in 2016 when they made the AAC championship game, or whether it's Malcolm Perry, they can really get rolling and they can be explosive. They don't have to be ground and pound. Now, when they play Notre Dame, I would imagine they're going to try to limit the possessions, and probably why you would look at maybe taking the points depending on what that number is going to be. And they haven't faced athletes like Notre Dame's athletes from an offensive standpoint. But yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. And when you look at the schedule right now, it's hard for me to envision Army not being in the AAC championship game. And Navy does have to play Tulane, so that could be a tricky spot for them in conference play. So realistically, you could be looking at Army having to play back-to-back games, you know, the week before the Army-Navy game. But there is a scenario out there, ladies and gentlemen, where Army and Navy play on one of their respective campuses on December 7th. And then the following week they go to, you know, the Commander Stadium and they play the Army Navy game. So it's a possibility. The reality is out there on those two programs. And it's kind of fun to talk
about. Like, what about Purdue? If you're Purdue, like, you went out and you paid Graham Harrell $1 million to be your offensive coordinator. You got Hudson Card out of the portal and your offense is still pathetic.
So why don't you get Jeff Monk? Like, yeah.
Right.
Go get Jeff Monk. And if you are not going to have the resources to compete against the Ohio States, the Michigans, the Oregons of the world, then do something creative. And I was wrong because Lance Leipold kind of bucked the trend, but I had always been screaming from the mountaintops for Kansas to hire, whether it was Niumatalolo when he was at Navy, or Munkin at Army, because you have to be creative. You have to do something different when you're at one of those schools. And I get it. Jeff Brohm had some success there at Purdue, but I mean, what's success at Purdue? 7-8 wins? I mean, you're looking at what Army's able to do or Navy's able to do. Yeah, I've always been a believer in schools kind of being creative like that. And look, Georgia Tech, you know, I know they got all happy when they fired Paul Johnson. They won the conference, man. They went to an Orange Bowl. They won an Orange Bowl when Paul Johnson was down there at Georgia Tech. It ended up falling apart, but he had a lot of success at Georgia Tech. He was a pain in the butt to play against for a number of years when he was down in Atlanta.
I guess the only question is, you know, I mean, there's nothing you can do in the portal, right? And Army and Navy can't do anything with the portal anyway because of, you know, their status as service academies. So,
and they have no NIL.
Right. So I guess that's, well, the government's their NIL. But I guess, like, that would be the question, right? Like, you know, what can you really do in terms of the transfer portal now with where college football free agency is? And the other thing is, and I have no idea the answer to this question, somebody smarter than me would. How many high schools are still running, you know, options and wing tees and all these different types of things? You know, I mean, is there really enough of a player pool for you to go after? I guess is really the only other question that I have. I mean, look, if there's supply, there's very little demand. And I'm sure there's a lot of kids out there playing high school football in these systems that don't want to go to, you know, that don't want to enlist at the Naval Academy or the Army or anything like that. So if you are one of those teams and those kids do exist out there in the high school ranks, you know, then maybe that'd be kind of an interesting thing for a Purdue type of team, or I don't know, a Cal maybe, I don't know, something like that. Just a team that's not going to go anywhere in these super conferences that we have.
By the way, Purdue's an absolute disaster. And
oh God, it's bad.
The betting market has bet them. The Notre Dame game, they bet them down. They bet them from 12 down to 7, 7.5. Notre Dame won that game 66-7. The betting market in the Oregon State Purdue game, it was like they had Biff's Almanac or something. That game went from like 6 to 2.5 on game day, and Oregon State won that game by 17. And then over the weekend, they got absolutely dump trucked by Wisconsin, a Wisconsin team that just blew a, what, 2-score lead against USC on the road, and they got absolutely blitzed by Wisconsin. So it doesn't feel like it's going to be a long tenure for Ryan Walters, who, you know, the hire at the time was certainly a bit head scratching, the DC from Illinois, and it's just year two. But if you're Purdue, you kind of have to pull the ripcord here. Doesn't it feel like it? And what did you do as we tie this back into your power ratings? What did you do with Purdue?
Yeah, Purdue, among many teams that I dropped here this week, I actually gave them an 8-point drop this week. Look, Wisconsin is not a very good football team, and they won 52-6. I mean, Purdue, they scored 49 points in their opener against Indiana State. They've scored 44 points in 4 FBS games since. They're bad. And not only that, they fire Graham Harrell, then they go out there and put up 6 points against Wisconsin. So clearly he was not the problem here. And this is the time of the year where, you know, again, I want to try to trust in a lot of the research I did over the summer. At the same time, what we see is what we get now, right? There will still be outliers and aberrations. It's college football. Shit happens. These things are still going to take place. But when you've got a fuller body of work from these teams now, and they're showing you that they're either really good or really bad, like SMU is apparently really good. I gave them an 8-point bump. Purdue is really bad. I gave them an 8-point decrease.
Yeah. You know, and going back to the SMU-Louisville game, it's funny because over the summer, I laid a ton of juice on SMU's over 7.5 wins, and then they looked kind of pedestrian week zero against Nevada. They lose to BYU, which now doesn't look like that bad of a loss considering BYU is a top 15 team and undefeated. But they have completely figured it out, and it's funny. You look across the country, Adam, at a couple spots where you just ask yourself, were they playing the wrong quarterback? And, you know, the same could be said here in town with UNLV, with, you know, the very highly public Haj Malik Williams, Matthew Saluka situation. I think UNLV, even though they lost to Syracuse, upgraded at quarterback. And it's pretty evident watching that Louisville SMU game for someone who had Louisville in a money line parlay like a dope. Kevin Jennings is a big upgrade over Preston Stone.
Yeah, it really is. And look, you know, the thing about SMU is they struggled a lot against Power 4/Power 5 competition the last couple of years. You know, not only that, even when they were in the AAC and Cincinnati moved up, UCF moved up to the Big 12. Of course, BYU joined the Big 12 as well, even though that they weren't in the AAC when SMU was. Like, they lost all those games too. So they were like 0-8, I think it was, when I wrote up the preview for this year's College Football Guide. Over the last two seasons against Power 5 types of teams, they were 0-5 a couple of years ago and then 0-3 last year. And I thought, okay, maybe Rhett Lashley just doesn't have the talent or the coaching chops to go out there and beat these teams. Well, this year he does. And the mistake that I made was I kind of looked at the Nevada game and I was like, okay, well, you know what? They badly outgained them. You know, they outgained them by 110 yards. Like, you know, that one was too close for comfort, but they figured it out in the fourth quarter. It was a bad spot, whatever. Then they lose the BYU game, and I dropped them in my power ratings. And then now the last 3 weeks, they've scored 66, 42, and 34 against power four teams. I guess we could call Florida State one, even though they're kind of not. But yeah, I mean, I had to give SMU a huge bump. I had that line 13.5 against Louisville last week. So not only did I have a wrong bet, but I had a very wrong number in that game. So had to make a substantial upgrade to SMU, and credit to the Ponies. They're playing well.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the play. I think I'm comparing to there was a play that Jeff Brohm on 3rd and 1, I think, ran 2 straight dives into the middle and they turned it over on downs. Jeff Brohm, man, you know, he gets a lot of credit and love, and he's been a great dog coach when you think back to his times at Purdue. Back-to-back weeks, he's made some pretty boneheaded mistakes situationally. It was a 4th and 1 against Notre Dame. They let the play clock expire. Is that all on him? Maybe not, but I thought that his play calling had some serious questions, and I thought that was a pivotal point in the game last weekend for Louisville when they failed to convert on 4th down running the same play in 2 consecutive plays against SMU. But credit to SMU, big win there. I know a couple people wrote it up in the guide for SMU over, so they're feeling pretty good. Before we take a break, Adam, we've hit on Purdue. We've hit on, you know, SMU, Army. Anyone else you want to highlight from a stock report standing up or down?
Yeah, there are a couple here. So Charlotte's a team that the market has actually liked a lot more than me over the last few weeks. They still don't have Max Brown back, but Charlotte was a team that people liked more than me coming into the season, and that's kind of followed through, even though they had such a slow start to the year. So I gave the 49ers a 5-point bump. Jacksonville State, my line was way too low in their game against Kennesaw State, so I gave them a 4-point bump. I dropped Kennesaw State 4.5 points. They are awful. They're Kent State level awful, to say the least. Another team, and look, this is a little bit tricky, but I was pretty high on App State coming into the season. And they have not performed up to expectation. And I know that they've been dealing with a lot with Hurricane Helene and really that whole area of the country is, and sending our thoughts out to them. I gave them a 3.5-point drop this week, or 3-point drop, excuse me. Last week's box score was misleading. They played better than the result would indicate. But this team is not really what I expected them to be. And it's one where you want to dig in, because nobody wants to be wrong in this business, right? I mean, nobody is ever wrong in this business based on social media, but you don't really want to admit you're wrong until you have to. I'm at the point now where I'm wrong on App State and I have to downgrade them. The issue is, though, there aren't really a whole lot of great teams in the Sun Belt. So this is going to be one of those conferences where I think everybody kind of beats everybody. So it may just be a conference I ultimately end up staying away from more often than not, just because everyone seems consistently inconsistent.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, letdown spots for week 7. Obviously Vanderbilt, but who else fits the billing? And a quick couple thoughts on a loaded up week 7, a weekend we've all been looking forward to from the summer. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome back. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast alongside Adam Burke. I am Tim Murray. Please rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast. 2 episodes a week, sometimes a third. We'll throw in there as a little bonus time. Make sure you check out Adam's article every Sunday, his updated power ratings. We just went through it. Some of his stock reports, SMU way up, Army continues to rise, Purdue and UAB continue to fall, and Army is a spot where, man, I'm really contemplating laying 26 with Army this weekend against UAB, just because Army is a freight train and UAB is a complete and utter disaster.
Which I think brings up a really good point before we move into some spots. I guess this is kind of a segue into spots, right? So these kids aren't stupid, right? College football players are not dumb. They know what's going on. They know what's going on within the program. You reach a certain point here where if you're UAB and everyone's, you know, declaring their red shirts now and all these kinds of things, this team is 1-4. Like, I think because of the nature of college football, where you know that you can go somewhere else and it's pretty easy to do, do we see some of or a lot of these teams that are really bad just start to mail it in, start to lose some of these kids that go, you know what, I want to keep my eligibility, you know, all that kind of thing?
Well, if you've played more than four games, then you're kind of screwed, right? So you started to see it around some bye weeks, but yeah, it's not crazy. And certainly we've seen some high profile ones, maybe some off the radar ones, Matthew Saluka being one at UNLV. Notre Dame lost a couple of guys, more depth pieces to the portal around their bye week. But, you know, situationally, last week, the letdown spots were pretty solid. Sam Houston State was in a bad spot, one of the worst spots of the year, but UTEP is just that bad. So that was a bet that did not come home. But UNLV lost outright as a 6-point favorite against Syracuse. I thought that was a tricky spot for them. Miami, Alabama, Duke, Arizona all did not cover. The only team on the Saturday slate that I thought could be in a tricky spot was Virginia Tech, but Stanford can't throw a forward pass right now without Ashton Daniels. And I think they're in a world of pain this weekend against Notre Dame, if it is Lamson going out there for the Cardinal. But all in all, spots last week that we pointed out, 5-2, or 2-5, I guess, if you want to look at it from the teams that were in those perceived letdown spots. Let's start with Vanderbilt, because obviously everybody's going to anticipate a letdown spot here for Vanderbilt. I did bet Kentucky right away at 12.5 at DraftKings on Sunday. Anything under 14, I would probably still play it. My worry would be this, Adam, twofold. One, Vanderbilt's style of play kind of allows them to avoid getting blown out. Diego Pavia is a covering god. But I do like Kentucky coming off a bye. They know that Vanderbilt's going to be an all-time high. And Mark Stoops is a very good defensive mind. So this is the classic letdown spot for Vanderbilt, who for the first time in school history beats the number one team in the country. They celebrate as they should. Can you get to the window on Kentucky in this spot? A night game in Lexington at the number 13.5.
I have it right at 13.5, so it would have to be one of those qualitative situational types of plays for me, which I don't know about it in this game because I still don't know what Kentucky's offense is. You know, I mean, they played that 13-12 game against Georgia. Maybe they figured some things out against Ohio, but, you know, even in the game against Ole Miss, you know, I mean, 336 yards of offense, 47 carries, 93 yards. Like, when you're a two-touchdown favorite, you got to score a little bit to cover in all likelihood. I just don't know that Kentucky can do that. Right now, they're missing kind of that star running back that has been sort of the hallmark of the program within the Stoops era. So that's the worry that I have. I think if you're kind of thinking about it in that respect, maybe you look at an under type of thing. If you kind of expect Vanderbilt to fall back a little bit, especially, again, as you said, the style of play of these two teams, this will be a slow-moving type of game. I mean, Kentucky in that upset over Ole Miss, they had the ball for 39-43. Vanderbilt, as you mentioned, had the ball for a long time against Alabama. So I think you just get a very slow pace of play in this type of game. And maybe that's the way that I would look at it.
Yeah, 45.5 is the total. And I think that's an interesting angle, certainly to look at. Arkansas, no letdown this week because they have a bye after their win over Tennessee. Washington, they get the win over Michigan. You know, it's funny. I tweeted out on Saturday that I said I bet on Washington because I was fading Alex Orji. And then when Jack Tuttle came in for Michigan, they actually looked like a decent offense. But Washington was able to figure out, get the win. And now, welcome to the Big Ten. USC's felt it as they lost last week to Minnesota. You just beat Michigan at home. You played Rutgers 2 weeks ago in New Jersey. And now you're back on the road to take on Iowa. I did get to the window on Iowa. This is going to be an 11 a.m. local start time. I think from a situational standpoint, it's really tricky for Washington. Iowa is always a team to have a hard time trusting. Their offense continues to stink, but I think Iowa gets the best of Washington here. Really tricky spot for Washington, thinking about that win over Michigan. Now you got to travel to Iowa. Early kickoff. I'll take the Hawkeyes on a short money line. I think it's minus 135 is out there at DraftKings as we record this. I'm looking at it. Yeah, minus 135 at DraftKings, minus 140 out there. What do you think about Iowa and Washington?
I think this is one of the tougher games of the week, because here's the thing about Washington. They had 6.3 yards per play against Michigan last week. And we've all kind of hung our hats on, well, Michigan's defense is still really good. Yeah, the offense is terrible, but the defense is still really good. And that's why they beat USC. And that's why they were able to hang on. You know, I mean, they played really well for three quarters against Minnesota before kind of letting the Gophers back into that game in the fourth. But it was all Michigan's defense is really, really good. Well, Washington just had 6.3 yards per play. In the Rutgers game, Washington had 521 yards. They should have won that game comfortably. I got very lucky with Rutgers in that one. Washington should have won that one comfortably. They didn't turn the ball over. They had 521 yards of offense on just 66 offensive plays. Like, Washington's offense from a yards per play standpoint has been terrific. I think this team is better than people realize. It's also tough to go and play that early kick at Kinnick when you've never played there. And also against an Iowa team that got embarrassed last week by Ohio State. So very, 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 very difficult game. But I think Washington is a play-on team for me going forward. So I don't really want to go against them this week, but I completely understand where you're coming from and certainly respect that opinion, especially under a field goal.
Yeah, Washington was one of my best bets last week, so happy to have them home. And then you quickly kick them to the curb and you bet against them. Two other spots I have not bet yet. One I think you'll like just to talk about it. And then the other, you know, these letdown spots, and as I alluded to, Thursday night, great situational spot. UTEP sucks. So they did not get to the window and really not close at all. But sometimes you have to hold your nose when you think about betting on a team like, Vanderbilt at home. Can you bet on UCLA? This is a horrendous spot for the Golden Gophers coming off of a thrilling win, which if you look at our guy, Parker Fleming, who I'm a big fan of, at Statso War, friend of the podcast. Did we really get beat that bad? The net success rates in week six, and the number one team was USC. If you want to flip that, the number one team was Minnesota. Should not have really won that game, right? Based off of his metrics. Net success, I think like minus 15, whatever it was. So I'm not smart enough to understand that graphic. All I know is that Minnesota probably a bit fortunate to get that win. And now you go on the road to UCLA. I don't know what the Ethan Garber situation is. Like I said, I haven't gotten to the window yet on this game, but this is a spot that is screaming. No one wants to bet UCLA. Can you dare take the Bruins catching 5.5 here against the Gophers off of a win over USC?
I would love to. I would love the chance to go out there and take UCLA in what appears to be a really, really good spot. But this is a team that scored 37 points in three Big Ten games. They have had a difficult schedule. There's no question about that. Indiana's a juggernaut. You know, LSU's a pretty good team as well. Oregon, Penn State. Honestly, I thought Penn State was really underwhelming last week. And if you go into the box score, it was even more underwhelming than the 27-11 score would suggest. That said, I don't know if Deshaun Foster is a good head coach at all. I think PJ Fleck kind of is, even though I've kind of soured on him a little bit here of late. And also, you know, some of the coordinator turnover for Minnesota has been problematic. But, man, this UCLA team is just generationally bad for that program. So I don't think I can do it. But I can't fault you if you do, because there's certainly no way I could make a case for Minnesota other than to say UCLA may just be that bad.
We rode that damn boat last week. Didn't think they'd win outright. Took it 8.5. Both Matt and I had it. Shouts to Matt, by the way. Back-to-back 4-1 weeks on the Thursday pod. So hopefully we're getting hot at the right time 4-2 week for your boy here. So good to have a decent week, even though I was still mad at myself for getting too cute regarding a Georgia Tech bet. But we digress. All right, the last spot that I wanted to get your thoughts on, you've mentioned them already in this podcast. The UL Monroe Warhawks, ladies and gentlemen, beat James Madison last week 21-19. And now this week they welcome in Southern Miss, who is very not good at football. And Monroe last week was a 16-point home dog to James Madison, wins outright. How do the Warhawks respond after taking down the Dukes?
Yeah, I don't really know how they're going to respond. I'm looking here, looking in the Killer Sports database to see the last time they were a favorite of this size against an FBS team. And it looks like you got to go back to September 26th of 2020. Louisiana Monroe was a 9.5-point favorite against UTEP. They lost 31-6. So it is a different era of Warhawk football. I think Brian Vincent's doing a hell of a job, and honestly, this may be a one-and-done type of situation for him where, you know, he's pretty highly regarded as an offensive coordinator. What he did last year at New Mexico was thoroughly impressive. And then now Louisiana Monroe, like, has a legitimate shot at making a bowl game based on what he's done here so far, with them off to a 4-1 start. But this is another one, though, where, you know, all the spots keep falling in these bad situations where Southern Miss is god-awful again. I mean,
yeah, they're going to have to. It's got to end.
It absolutely has to end. But I will say, again, you know, and I know our good friend Brad Powers, you know, he likes to bet against historical outliers. Monroe being a favorite of this size against an FBS team is absolutely an historical outlier. So all of a sudden, they have expectation. Instead of being the team that, even under Terry Bowden, you know, knocked off some, they had that big upset over Troy. They had another big upset I can't think of off the top of my head. But they had, like, huge upsets in back-to-back years. They're better at being the hunter, and they are not the hunter in this game. So I can see where you're going with this, but Southern Miss is atrocious, man.
So once again, and as I always point out as kind of a PSA, these aren't all auto plays. I like to talk them out, and sometimes you stay off situations. But this is definitely a big spot for ULM, and – you know, letdown spots are real. I mean, if you don't, Vanderbilt beating Alabama after they beat Georgia, Northern Illinois beating Notre Dame after they, you know, beat Texas A&M, Northern Illinois 2 weeks later in their first game losing to Buffalo. Like, spots are real. These are kids, and they get little happy, and maybe the market gets a little oversaturated as well.
I got one real interesting one for you here. Mountain West, San Jose State, Colorado State. So San Jose State, a couple of games ago, they have the double overtime game against Washington State where they blew that fourth quarter lead, lose the game in the second overtime period. Last week, they go 8 plays, 80 yards in 1:31, take a lead over Nevada in the final minute of the game. Now they got to go to Fort Collins and play in elevation in Colorado State's first conference game of the season, which is kind of a shocker. But Colorado State also coming off of the overtime game against Oregon State last week. Really weird game, because you can kind of talk yourself into spots both ways. The tough thing for me is I was on Oregon State last week. I laid the number. I think it was 11.5. I liked them. I thought it was a good spot for them. I've been against Colorado State a lot. I have San Jose State lined as a 6.5-point favorite in this game. So I think this one's kind of interesting and maybe sort of speaks to, and man, he's gotten a lot of mentions on today's show, Ken Niumatalolo. Like, this is exactly the kind of coach you want in a game such as this, right? I think San Jose State, despite what looks like a really awful spot and going to elevation, I think they're the side in this one.
Yeah, this is a game I've looked at, and I thought about both sides here in this one. Torrey Horton did return, and he looked healthy last week in the loss against Oregon State. He's one of the most talented players, maybe outside of Ashton Gentry, might be the most talented player in the Mountain West. He's a pro. And he was back and played well against Oregon State. But I've been thoroughly disappointed with Jaden Norvell. Last year, he did get me over 4.5 wins, but the fact that they didn't make a bowl was a pretty big surprise. And then this year as well. So, yeah, Coach Ken, give him a lot of credit. If you look at returning production from last year to this year, JVT and I talked about it a couple weeks back. We didn't know what the hell to think of San Jose State. And this is a team now, what, they're 4-1, and I think they have Wyoming down the line. They should be in a bowl game this year, which is a pretty big accomplishment for a team that lost almost all of its production from a year ago.
One other thing that I think we need to mention here, now maybe a couple of things, I guess. So the Clemson Tigers are all of a sudden really good again. They've won 4 in a row, all of them by margin. And Tim, well, the last 4 games, Clemson has scored 90 points in the first quarter. Like that, last week they had 17 against Florida State. They completely took the Seminoles out of the game right away. 10-0 against Stanford, 28-0 against NC State, 35-0 against App State coming off of the Georgia game. So they're a 20-point favorite here against Wake Forest. They're 6.5-point favorite in the first quarter over at DraftKings. They've scored 90 points in the first quarter in the last 4 weeks, and Wake Forest isn't any good. So out here, obviously, we don't have access to DraftKings, and we still can't bet with them for a while because of sale and whatnot. But if you have access to that market, and I don't know when the rest of the books will kind of open that first quarter market, Clemson minus 6.5 first quarter against Wake Forest. They've started really, really fast. Cade Klubnik seems to be running this offense really, really well. All of a sudden, I'm really starting to think about putting in a position for Clemson to make the college football playoff. And I realize that the number is not great relative to what I could have had earlier on. They're minus 110 at DraftKings now to make the playoff. And I think the current version of Clemson is better than Miami, and it's better than SMU. I think this Clemson team is going to make the playoff.
I'm not going to push back. I mean, they have one loss. It was to Georgia. And if they go into the ACC championship 11-1, I think win or lose, they're in. And to be honest, thinking back to a bet that we made on the podcast, you know, sometimes you make positions like I did with Carson Beck before they lost to Alabama, not a good position on the Heisman market. I bet Clemson to reach the ACC championship at even money on September 19th here on the pod. And I don't, it would be a stunner if they don't make it. Now, tiebreakers and all that stuff with, you know, SMU being unbeaten so far in conference play, you certainly could see something crazy happen. But yeah, this Clemson team looks like they're the real deal. And it's pretty impressive what we've been seeing there from the Clemson Tigers.
I'm surprised you didn't mention this spot. Speaking of the ACC, I mean, you got to take Pitt this week, right? 3-point favorite against Cal. Coming off of whatever happened in that game against Miami. Also, Cal's road games this season, at Auburn, which they won down at Jordan-Hare, at Florida State, so a trip to Tallahassee, and now they're going to Pittsburgh. So, you know, this is an example of what conference realignment.
By the way,
dude, offensively, they're good.
Yeah.
I mean, Olsen's
good.
Pat Narduzzi finally figured out, hey, we need to score points. Because, you know, remember, who was the offensive coordinator who he fired?
I can't think of his name. Yeah.
Like that was with the Kenny Pickett era where they were just putting up points left and right. And then he's like, yeah, I don't want to score points anymore. Yeah, it was. Yeah. Hey, you're absolutely right. So they were scoring a Frank Cignetti, right?
Yeah, there it is.
They were scoring a bunch of points. And then Pat Narduzzi was like, nah, I don't really want to do that anymore. Yeah, and then
classic Narduzzi complaining about the year that they won the ACC. it wasn't that great. Yeah, and then you suck, and now you're scoring points again, and you're good.
Right. Crazy. Funny how that works, right? But so Cade Bell is their offensive coordinator. Now, Cade Bell was actually coaching for his dad down at Western Carolina. He's 31 years old. His dad, Kerwin Bell, longtime football coach. But Cade Bell and Eli Holstein, that's quite an impressive tandem here. This is a mid-afternoon game for Cal, so I guess that maybe helps them. But, man, I've been trying to ride this Pitt team, and it's tough because they keep finding ways to win games close when they probably shouldn't. This might be a blowout type of spot here where they got to bye next week, and then they host Syracuse on the short week. I think this might be blowout central for Pitt here.
By the way, Stormy Bonatoni, our colleague, will be on the sidelines for this Cal-Pitt game. So she had the big one last week down at Texas A&M, which Texas A&M. Thank you very much. Easy rocking chair winner on that one. So I think I am, by the way, going to add Jalen Milroe to the Heisman portfolio. Just keep crewing it up. I've got Beck, Gabriel, Nico. Might as well light Jefferson and drones on fire. Those were the long shot pizza bets over the summer. But I liked your take on Milroe at 11-1. The numbers are great. And if they win the SEC, if they get to the SEC championship, if they're a playoff team, certainly is going to be in the discussion there.
Is Cade Klubnik worth it at 16-1?
He's a riser, man. He is a big riser. And, you know, it's funny, over the summer, I told myself, because I bet him to win the Heisman the last 2 years. One was just a complete long shot flyer. I think he was playing mop up duty 2 years ago against Georgia Tech. And I put in 100-1 bet on him, and he didn't play until the end of the year. And then last year I bet him as well, but Cade Klubnik was around 40-1 at Circa on October 2nd, and he's now down to 20-1. So you can get him at 20-1 at Circa, 20-1 at BetMGM. I wouldn't push back on you. I mean, look at their schedule. They're going to be a favorite in every single game until the ACC championship, when they more than likely face Miami.
A double-digit favorite at that. I have a 9.5-point favorite at Pitt, which is their smallest number. And the way their offense is humming, that's probably going to be 11.5 for me by then. So they're a double-digit favorite in every game until they probably run into, you know, either Miami or SMU.
All right, before we get out of here, Oregon, Ohio State, you're an Ohio State guy. First time Oregon's been a home dog since October 13th, 2018. They closed as a 3.5-point dog that day, and they beat Washington in overtime. How are you feeling about your Buckeyes headed out to Autzen?
Well, I wasn't feeling all that great. By the way, my line is, I believe, 2.5 in this game. So it is 2, Ohio State minus 2. So it is down below the key number, and there are still some 3.5s out there, at least as we're recording. I didn't feel great about it until Ohio State did what they did to Iowa, because Iowa is a really, really good defensive team, and the Buckeyes just completely suffocated them. They took Johnson out of the game at running back. Very impressive performance for Ohio State, but it was also their first test. And now they really get a road test here against Oregon. The reality is, I don't even think it matters whoever wins or loses this game. They're going to the college football playoff. It's just a matter of if they have a bye or not, in all likelihood. And of course, we could run this one back down the line anyway. But, you know, look, as of now, I lean towards Oregon. I don't fully believe in Will Howard yet, but I have a pretty good idea of what Dylan Gabriel's capable of. So I lean with Oregon here in this one. And also, I just think Dan Lanning's a much better head coach than Ryan Day, and I think that matters here in this game.
Yeah, that's the way I would lean here. I said it all summer. The winner of this game will lose in the Big Ten championship. I felt like this would be a split waiting to happen. But Jeremiah Smith, as crazy as it sounds, might be better than advertised. And this dude was very highly advertised. He is the two freshmen that we're seeing play wide receiver in America right now, with what we're seeing with Ryan Williams at Bama and Jeremiah Smith at Ohio State. It's pretty remarkable, these two young dudes and how good they are. By the way, Jeremiah Smith, a riser in the Heisman market, his number as low as 25-1 at Circa win the Heisman, high as 50-1 out there at BetMGM. But he is kind of snuck into the Heisman conversation heading into this showdown in Eugene.
I mean, look, he's only got 23 catches though over Ohio State's 5 games, so you know, you need a little bit more. I mean, you think about Devontae Smith winning the Heisman and the obscene season that he had. Jeremiah Smith has a long you're just wasting money. That's a waste of money.
All right, what's not a waste of money is I don't know,
a VSiN Pro subscription.
Damn, there it is. Easy.
NBA betting guide comes out on Thursday. Jonathan Von Tobel, Zach Cohen, Kelly Bidlin putting that one together for you.
Man, we could have made that so much cleaner. Maybe Ryan can clean it up there at the end. But all right, that's going to do it for the podcast. Thanks to Adam Burke, as always. And as he just said, become a VSiN Pro subscriber. Follow us on Twitter at Skating Tripods, at One Tim Murray. We're back later this week, myself and Matt Humans, breaking down the Week 7 card of college football. Please rate, review, and subscribe to the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.